Welcome to the Windsor Podcast.
I don't know about you, but I got into this to help people. We need more openness and more transparency in government.
Here's your host, Mark McKenzie.
Thank you so much for tuning in again to the Windsor Podcast. Yeah, I'm Mark McKenzie, and I'm so sorry. My sincere apologies on the delay on getting a new episode up. It's been months now. I'm so embarrassed. We had the Christmas holidays, which kept me busy, and then we got right into budget after that. And then I had a couple guests that I was supposed to have one actually. So here's the deal. I was supposed to have one big guest. They ended up postponing a week, so I put it off a week. Then they're like, we don't know if that week's going to work either. Let's aim for next week. And then it kind of just getting pushed and pushed and pushed. And so I was waiting for them. And again, then the holidays and budget and all of that stuff. So, but that's still not an excuse. It's on me. So again, my sincere apologies. But welcome back. So much has happened. So much going on, not only in the city of Windsor, but Essex County. And I mean, provincially, federally as well. I mean, it sounds like, it seems like the federal government announcing $1 billion every day of new investment. I don't know where they're coming up with this money, but we'll discuss some of that and more. Got an amazing guest for you this week as well. Remember Bill Walichka from Much Music? He was a VJ on Much Music for many years, then went on to Much More Music. Well, Bill Walichka, iconic TV personality, ended up writing a book. It's called A Happy Has-Been. And he's going to be signing it this upcoming Saturday, April 13th, from 10 until 1 at Indigo at Devonshire Mall in Windsor. So I'm chatting with Bill. We're going to talk about the book, his time at Much Music, and hopefully a few other things as well. So that's going to be coming up in just a couple minutes. We'll be chatting with Bill Walichka, talking about the book signing, his book, and much more. So stay tuned for that. I've really been following the whole name change of the new Kingsville High School. And man, oh man, this whole thing, what a disaster. You know, I know like people like to criticize council a lot, you know, especially when things get a bit haywire. But man, those Greater Essex County District School Board meetings, this isn't just this term. I mean, it was last term as well. I don't know what's going on there. There's always drama going on. Now it's all about a school name. All I got to say is that they didn't follow the rules, right? Like they had a list of names. They had a naming committee. And then there were what, four or five names that were brought to the trustees. And they said, all right, here's the names. Which ones do you like? And then they choose a name that wasn't even on the list. So I think that's where a lot of people then got upset about that. All right. And then they heard the outcry from the public and still decided to pretty much stick with that name. Well, they changed it a little bit. So originally, they were going to call it Erie Migration Academy. Well, they decided to change that due to a recommendation from some other board members, some people from the community as well, because of the acronym EMA. Eat my a**. Okay, and that's pretty much what the kids like to say. Instead of saying that, I guess that's the new thing. They'll say EMA. So they're like, okay, maybe we should change that. Well, now they've changed it to Erie Migration District School. Again, after that backlash from the community on that vulgar acronym. So Julia Burgess, she was the trustee that put forward the original name for the school and seconded by trustee Kim McKinley. Well, a few trustees very upset about this. Trustee Linda Shin opposed it. Trustee Armstrong opposed it. And trustee Cook opposed it as well. And then trustee Cook actually said that it was a whole mess and kind of a way to just shut everybody up. Quote, she said they didn't want trustees to talk. They didn't want to hear anything from anybody in the community. All they wanted to do was shove it through. And that's what they did. And you know, going on, she said it was wrong. It's wrong to the trustees. And she said, but more importantly, it's wrong to the community. And she said, all it did was kind of brush it under the rug and acknowledged that not only is it a mess, but it's a mess that somebody's trying to kind of, you know, backpedal and make it better. But she says she doesn't even know what the future is going to be like. She doesn't know if she's going to move forward as a trustee. She doesn't know if she wants to belong to the board. She said she's just really disappointed at what happened. So it's going to be interesting to see what ends up happening there with that. Is she going to step down? I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Trustee Nancy Armstrong didn't even return for the public meeting afterwards, I guess. So Trustee Cook ended up just walking out, didn't stay for the public meeting. Trustee Nancy Armstrong also didn't return for the public meeting. And then Trustee Burgess denied comment following that special meeting. So, man, some drama going on with the Greater Essex County District School Board. And then not only that, but then you hear that the Greater Essex County District School Board has, like, you know, an $8-something million deficit, and they're telling schools, oh, you better, you know, don't put the heat so high. And once the warmer weather comes, you know, keep it a bit warmer to try to save money. Just tell, you know, tell students and tell the staff to wear a sweater if they're too cold. It's amazing what's going on with that board now. But yet they have plenty of money for the administrative costs, don't they, right? A lot of administrators there making a lot of money. There is some good news, though. The Ontario government did announce that they're going to be putting $1.3 billion towards building schools as well as child care spaces. So Stephen Lecce came out and said the province putting that money again towards building and expanding schools. So that'll go towards creating over 27,000 new student spaces and more than 1,700 child care spaces. So it's all a part of a planned $16 billion over the next 10 years to build schools and child care spaces in Ontario. And Lecce says that he also has introduced a plan to cut construction timelines in half, kind of encouraging boards to standardize the design of new school construction so that way they can be built faster. Fully agree with it. I don't understand why every school needs to be different. It makes no sense to me. You know, it's like, look, here's a good design. Go with it. And look, you can make a little tweak here or there, right? But I don't understand why they used to. Why it's like, okay, well, now let's go get a consultant and an architect to then design this whole new school. Well, why? Why are you wasting money on that, right? And so I brought that forward, you know, just looking at with the municipality in the city of Windsor, I've said, why do we contract everything out? Why do we continue to need to do this when we have staff in-house? We have, like, for example, we have landscape architects, right? So you look at Lansbury Park, the redevelopment proposal there, right? That entire design was done in-house. So I brought forward that question when we're looking at the Festival Plaza redevelopment project. I said, well, why are we paying outside consultants and outside architectural engineers and architectural designers to design this project? I said, why? We have staff. They've already done it for Lansbury Park on Ottawa Street. So why can they not do that for the riverfront as well? And so these are now things that we're starting to explore also, because, like, yeah, it makes sense. We have engineers, right? We have architects. We have all of these people working for the city already. So let's utilize them to their full ability, right? So some other big news, NFL draft party going to be coming to Windsor. I think this is super cool. It's going to be happening Saturday, April 27th, front lawn of City Hall from noon until 6 p.m. It was announced just about a week or so ago. So it's going to feature NFL-themed interactive games. There's going to be a NFL draft viewing area, free football skills and coaching clinic for some local youth. So I think it's amazing. It's a totally free event. There's going to be some past players that are going to be showing up also, maybe even some current players. Obviously, you know, Luke Wilson from the area, Tyrone Crawford from Windsor as well, played for the Dallas Cowboys. So I don't know, but I would assume, you know, maybe we'll see one or both of those guys showing up. And then the downtown BIA going to be hosting an event after the city's celebration. So they're going to be closing Olette from Park to University, and there's going to be lots going on there as well. I think some bands going to be playing. And some other stuff. So, of course, the NFL draft taking place in downtown Detroit April 25th, 26th, and 27th, and expected to draw hundreds of thousands of fans to the region. It's a huge event. Windsor's Theo Johnson expected to be taken in this year's draft. I know a lot of the hotel rooms in downtown Detroit already fully booked, so now many of those hotel rooms in Windsor, they're getting booked up really fast, especially now as we get closer to that date. So it's going to be great. Again, NFL draft party happening in Windsor. Windsor's NFL draft party, Saturday, April 27th, front lawn of City Hall from noon until 6 p.m. More details over at citywindsor.ca. All right, we have a guest on the phone right now from Much Music fame. Yeah, you know this guy from Much Music, Much More Music, and then he moved on to A-Channel in Ottawa and currently working for Chorus Entertainment in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. The one, the only, Bill Walichka. He's going to be at Indigo this Saturday from 10 until 1 p.m. April 13th, this Saturday. Indigo at Devonshire Mall, signing his book, A Happy Has-Been. So again, Bill Walichka on the line with us right now. Hey, Bill, thanks for joining me on the podcast today. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Mark. How are things?
I'm good, man. Looking forward to seeing you come to Windsor. You're going to be here coming up on April 13th. Indigo at Devonshire Mall from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Kind of signing the book, A Happy Has-Been. It's been that title, man. Do you want to kind of explain to the listeners like how you came up with that title? Because anyone who sees that is going to be like, what? Like, why is the guy calling himself a has-been?
I love it, though. It's tongue in cheek. I don't take myself too seriously. And to some that might have watched Much Music or Much More Music years ago and might hear my name, they'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah. Where is he? Oh, I thought he died. No, I'm still here. There are people that, followed my career all over the place. And there are some people that don't know that I have a music journalistic past here in Eastern Ontario. So it encompasses all that. I talk about why. It was a coworker that called me that one time, an ex-coworker. And it kind of hurt. But then I realized, it's true. I don't have that national presence anymore. And that's by design. I did that on purpose. And it talks about it in the book.
One thing that, and I don't expect you to remember this, but you are one of the nice guys in the business. Anybody that I've chatted with who's kind of worked with you, I know Bob, your old boss, and a few other people who've worked with you in the past, and everybody says, oh my God, Bill is one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. And some people who see that fame kind of have that ego. You never had that. And the thing I said, I don't expect you to remember, back in 2006, I was in radio maybe. I'd been in radio 2 or 3 years at that point, and I got an interview on Much Music, and I actually emailed you. You were in Ottawa at the time, and I said, hey, man, like, I don't expect you to reply, but I have this interview for Much Music. Obviously, you were there for years, and I loved watching you, and do you have any advice? And you wrote back the same day and gave me some amazing advice and said, just be yourself. Don't try to be like anybody else. And I thought, wow, like, this guy doesn't have to write back to me, but he didn't. It speaks about the type of person you are, man.
I've heard that I'm a nice guy. And what I find surprising in when someone tells me that is it's not that hard. Like, are there that many people out there who are asses like that make me look good? I've heard that before, and I've been blessed, I think, with an outlook that is a positive one, where I try to elevate people around me. Nothing really phases me. I think I've been through enough in my life where I don't let toxicity into my life. I don't like drama. I consider myself very, very fortunate. And again, the book talks about all that stuff. And life's too short to be miserable or to be grumpy or to be mean to people.
It really is. And as you get older, you kind of realize that even more. Like, now that I'm 42, I have a kid, and I realize life's too short to deal with the toxic people, right?
And I think also I've been through enough where I've worked with enough egos over the years.
Yeah.
And I from very early on, had a little talk with myself and said, you are never going to be an ass like that person.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And I don't care how much money someone makes, what their stature is, what their title is. I talk about this in the book too. It's like, I don't suck up to CEOs, and I would rather spend time with the cleaner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But those are sometimes the people that you learn the most from too.
I agree. Absolutely.
What made you want to write a book, especially after all these years?
I never really thought about it. I don't really think my story was that interesting of a published book. I learned over the years that everyone has a story, man. Like you, Mark, I'm sure have a great story. But during COVID, all these podcasts were coming up, and I kept being asked. I think what happened is I did one, and then someone found out that I did one podcast. I just kept getting asked to do all these podcasts talking about Much Music or my life or whatever. And then I started writing stuff down one day so I wouldn't forget stories that were just coming to me. And I went over to my computer one weekend and just started typing stories so that I wouldn't forget in case something came up or I was asked. And then more of stories kept coming up or people reminding me of things. I just started writing one weekend, not with the intention of writing a biography. And then a few months later, I'm looking at this going, you know, if I massage this and add to it and really think about it, I think I might have a book here. And just kept at it and found a publisher. And it came out last fall and it's been doing good. Like I'm hearing sales, you know, it's been doing very well in Canada and it's still selling. That's the funny thing. And, you know, in the US and Poland, and my publisher says, oh, you sold some copies in England and Germany. I'm like, wow.
Oh, wow.
I'm thinking transplanted Canadians that miss Canada.
Sure.
Nope. I don't know. But yeah, it's been great. The Much Music documentary, which came out last fall, I did a couple of dates with that. And the best part were the Q&As after, just talking with people. And I did a little bit of a book tour last fall and met a lot of people that, you know, shared beautiful sentiments that made me happy that I put this out and connecting with these people. And I was, you know, I was told by some people that I was their babysitter, which don't, you know, I don't want that responsibility. But the little things like that, or they had a memory of an interview that I did that touched them, and some even showed me pictures when they visited Much on a tour when they were younger of me and them. And I'm just surprised they still had it. You know, just it's beautiful. It was very, very beautiful.
Well, Much Music and you especially, I mean, you were a part of people's lives growing up, right? I mean, I was a child, and then you were with me, and Much Music was with me through not only my childhood, but then, you know, my teenage years and even into my 20s, right? And then you know, you go to Much, I went to Much More Music, as you did also, right? As you kind of get older, yep. I went there. And so it was like you almost become like a friend, really.
That's a huge compliment. Yeah. And I never, you don't really think about it at the time while you're doing it. If you are making an impact at all, hopefully you're just entertaining. And I think what this documentary that came out last fall, that was supposed to be on Crave, and there's legalities with it where it can't be played. They have to work some stuff out with the lawyers. I don't know. But I think you needed 10, 20 years away from something to look back fondly on it. And I think that's what Much Music is going through now, where it's been 20 years and people are looking back fondly and it's nostalgic. And I think this documentary came along at the right time. I think my book came along at the right time where people it's registering. But what freaks me out, man, is Mark, I've been meeting parents who come to the book signing and they have to explain to their kid what Much Music was. I don't want to get that old.
Yeah. Yeah. But are we going to, like, I totally get it, but I you know, and sometimes I think, like, you know, oh man, like, why did they almost shut it down? Not shut it down, but, you know, they totally changed it. It's not what it was, right? And it's like, could you even do that now? And part of me is like, I don't know if you could. I don't know if you could recreate that in 2024.
I think there's an appetite for people who love music and love interviews. I posted a lot of my specials on my YouTube channel and like they get hundreds of thousands of hits. So I think if people have the inclination and have the time to seek it out, you know, the art and craft of a good interview, I think, is missing these days. And you can see that when you watch entertainment television. It's a 10-second soundbite on a red carpet about who they're wearing. There's no opportunity to let interviews breathe and to get into something with, you know, like Barbara Walters would, or like we would years ago, and compelling interviews that made you think, that made you, you know, might have taught you something. It's more than just entertainment. It's something that you can get out of it. And I think if given the opportunity, you know, you can't repeat those days. You can't recapture the glory of what it was because it's gone. But I think if someone came along with the right presentation and the right platform, I think it would work.
One of your strengths, I think, was your interview skills. I still say you were the best interviewer on that station, and all the VJs kind of had their genres that they kind of stuck to. You know, George was kind of the punk metal guy. Master T was the rap and hip hop guy. But one thing I always liked about you was your vast musical taste, your vast musical knowledge.
Oh, man, thanks.
Do you think, though, that's what made you such a great VJ, is that they could throw anybody in front of you, you know, Prince, David Bowie, but also Aerosmith and you know, some of these big rock bands, and it didn't matter. You knew everything about these artists that you were interviewing, no matter the genre.
I do have a huge a huge varied taste in music. My CD collection, yeah, I still collect CDs. I still listen.
Oh, me
to them.
Too.
they're in the thousands, and it's all over the place. I have my favorites, of course, but yeah, you know, half the time I'd be interviewing someone, and necessarily I wouldn't go home and listen to them. But it goes back to you can find something interesting about anybody, and it doesn't matter like what they do. In this case, we're talking about musicians, and you know, everyone has a story, but I know ideally whoever was watching was going to be a fan of that band, and I wanted the artist and I wanted that fan to walk away from that experience getting something out of it. And it was just a goal that I always had, and I think I was lucky. And I started off as an editor, and I still love the behind the scenes stuff. I've enjoy that more than the on-air stuff. It's more creative, it's fun. I love putting stuff together. But as an editor, I watched a lot of interviews, putting together stories. And, you know, I learned from the best. Denise Donlan was an amazing interviewer. Christopher Ward was. And I watched them, and I cut some interviews that didn't work. And I learned very early on, you know, what makes a great interview. And that has never left me. So thanks for saying that. That does mean a lot.
Well, and I always, I try, you know, to always make my interviews great whenever I interview somebody. And I always say, well, it's because I would watch, you know, you on Much Music, or I'd listen to Alan Cross interview artists as well. Like, you know, you have those few people that you kind of go back to, and you listen to them do interviews or watch them do interviews. And there's things you can kind of take from that. And it almost, I guess, kind of just gets into your head, and then, you know, you shape yourself off those people a little bit as well.
Yeah, and you add your own little, you know, your whatever personality
exactly.
You might have. And it, but like, again, I was lucky that I had some really good teachers just watching and by osmosis.
You've interviewed some of the biggest names in music over the years too. And is there anyone that, you know, obviously there's times where you're probably like, oh my gosh, like, and you still get a little bit nervous depending who it is. I'm sure who would have been the one where you were like, oh my God, like, I can't believe this is happening. Or
Mark,
did it happen probably more than once with you?
There's been so many times, and I talk about this in the book, and I refer to them as perfect circles. since kindergarten, I love music. I'm not a musician, but I appreciate all kinds of music. And, you know, growing up, like anyone in high school, music was a badge for me. You know, I had on my jean jacket patches of Led Zeppelin or Ozzy or pins of The Cure, posters in my walls, posters in my locker at school. And I've managed to interview every single artist that has shaped me and has shaped my taste. And I'm talking maybe Led Zeppelin. I'm talking about maybe 25 different artists that I loved growing up and have spent time with them all and met them all. And you don't realize it until after the interview is done and you're maybe helping the cameraman pack up or whatever. And it's like, man, I just spent an hour with Robert Smith. I had a poster of The Cure in my locker growing up. You know, it's like little things like that that just, it makes me look back. And I don't like to look back too much, but sure. It makes me look back and just appreciate what I had and what we did as a channel for Canada. And humbly, I'm grateful. And just being at the right place at the right time, I guess, for that particular scene in the 90s and early 2000s. And I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And I go to bed the happiest guy in the world.
Well, and the fact that you had Paul Langlois from the Tragically Hip write the foreword for the book, I mean, I think that speaks wonders as well. The fact that he would even do that, like, it shows how much he also meant to the Tragically Hip.
Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about living in Kingston.
Yeah.
I moved here about 12 years ago, and yeah, I've been interviewing the guys probably since the mid 90s. At this point, I probably interviewed them more than anyone in the world. Moving to Kingston and eventually, you know, fortifying these friendships with the guys. And first and foremost, I'm a Hip fan before anything else. And just last week, you know, you're driving down the street and I see Langlois outside of one bar and he's having a cigarette, and I drive by and I go, buddy, and he looks back and he goes, Bill, and he's got this big wave going on. And I run into the guys all the time. And I got Rob Baker to do a scene in this film that I am part of I emailed him and I go, hey, you feel like doing this? Here's the script. You'd be perfect. You'd be playing yourself. And he's like, yeah, you know, I'm into it. And I managed to have a little bit of a friendship with Gord's brothers over the years and Mike Downey, who's helming this amazing 4-part documentary that'll be out in the fall on Amazon. So yeah, I am very lucky in that, not just a fan of the band, but, you know, friends with them and their families as well. I'm tearing up a little bit because, yeah, Paul's forward when he emailed it to me. I started crying when I read it.
And then you mentioned, you know, is there a film in production about your life? Because as I read this, as I read the book, I'm like, why is this not like a movie? Like, why does Bill not have a movie about his life? Because you totally could.
There's a Kingston filmmaker who just loved the story of this once, in his words, not mine, once prominent national journalist who found his way down to a small city. And, you know, so it's sort of a parallel universe of my life, but he's taken a lot of liberties.
Gotcha.
So I'm basically playing myself, and the idea is that I'm trying to get back to the big city and I'm working on a demo reel. The thread throughout the film is it's real Kingston bands, real performances that I'm interviewing. And there's a love story in there. So we did a live table read at the Kingston Canadian Film Festival just a few weeks ago. It was like, yeah, all the principals were at a table reading a script in front of a live audience. And it was huge. And they laughed at the right places, which is nice. We've shot some stuff already and we'll slowly shoot it over the course of the spring and the summer and the fall, and it'll be edited and in time for next year's Kingston Canadian Film Festival.
Wow.
It'll have all these Kingston musicians in it, and it's very funny, the script. I'm not an actor. I've never pursued it. I've done some things, but I basically play myself, so it's not that hard. And I can't screw it up because it's so funny.
Well, I look forward to checking it out, man, and looking forward to you coming to town again Saturday, April 13th, Indigo at Devonshire Mall from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. The book will be on sale there, but of course, if people want to get it before that, it is available many places, Amazon, indigo.ca. People can just go to billwilichka.ca, right, if they want any more info?
Absolutely, for sure. And if Jeff Burrows is listening, Jeff, get your ass down there.
I will even text Jeff and be like, Jeff, Bill really wants you to be there. So
it's funny. They were in Ottawa last fall, and I went and saw them. And I saw them after the show, and I gave them a book because there's a chapter in there about the Tea Party. And Stuart Chatwood says, you forgot to share all this, share the book. I go, yeah, when someone's done, pass it on. And he sat down with the book like as if he was a school teacher. Come on, kids, gather around. I'm going to read you a story.
They are such good guys, and obviously Jeff does a lot for local charities as well. And
I know
you're even raising funds for Hiatus House locally as well while you're in town. So
yeah, the women's shelter. I'm just gonna have a bucket, and if people come by, they can want to throw in some toonies or loonies or fives or tens or whatever. I'll top it up, and I'm doing that at every stop for the book tour.
Wow.
In April. There's a whole chapter in there about ending men coming together to end men's violence against women. So
awesome. Well, thanks, Bill. I appreciate it again. Indigo, Devonshire Mall, Saturday, April 13th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can head on down there, meet Bill Wilichka, and check out his website, billwilichka.ca. Thanks for the time today, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. It's made my day. Thank you.
There you go. Bill Wilichka joining us on the podcast this week. Super cool to chat with him. And hopefully you'll be able to make it out to Indigo Devonshire Mall this Saturday, April 13th from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. signing his book, A Happy Has-Been. So I'm not sure if you saw Ontario Premier Doug Ford has come out and told the LCBO to bring back paper bags in stores. Yeah, he's directed the Liquor Control Board of Ontario to immediately reverse its decision to get rid of paper bags. The LCBO announced back in April of 2023 that it would start phasing out the bags, saying the move would divert 2,665 tons of waste from landfills and save the equivalent of, quote, over 188,000 trees every year. As of September 5th of 2023, the paper bags stopped being available in stores, so customers then had to start bringing a reusable bag or purchase one of their reusable bags. You could also use free cardboard boxes that LCBO provides. But now Premier Ford has written
to the president and CEO of the LCBO saying, quote, families are already struggling to make ends meet. They shouldn't have to face the additional costs of having to buy a reusable bag or instead openly carry their alcohol in public. He also says that the environmental merits of the decision are, quote, questionable at best since paper bags can be recycled. Amen to that. The whole elimination of bags at grocery stores, and now it's like, okay, well, look, I get, first off, all right, let's go back. I remember when I was a kid, all they had was paper bags. Back in my day, yes, all they had was paper bags at grocery stores, paper bags. And then there was the whole move from the environmentalists saying, how, you need to get rid of these paper bags. Think about all the trees. Think about all the trees you're cutting down for these paper bags. Let's go to plastic bags. They're cheaper and you're not cutting down trees. So then all of a sudden they shifted to plastic bags. Now, get rid of the plastic bags. They're horrible for the environment. You can't recycle them. Yada, yada, yada. Why are we not going back to paper bags? We can recycle the paper bags. I love the fact that when I go shopping at the States, which isn't, you know, crazy often anymore. I used to be there every weekend, right? Especially when I was at 89X, I had events over there all the time. I'd always hit up Kroger, Meijer, right? And get the cheaper groceries. And I loved the fact that you could get paper bags at no additional cost. But when I'm going to a grocery store, look, we're already paying an arm and a leg for our groceries. Now I gotta remember to bring my own bag. And then if I don't remember to bring my own bag, now I have to go purchase a bag that is made out of plastic. 90% of those bags have plastic materials in them. Actually, I'd be willing to say that, in all honesty, 100% probably of those reusable bags have plastic in them. There's so many things that are made with plastic that you don't even think about. Everything. There's plastic in everything, right? So why are we not going back to the paper bags? I don't get it. I love paper bags. We know we can recycle them now. It's not the 1980s where, you know, we weren't really recycling, right? So I am fully in favor of this. And in fact, I think that the premier should even go one step further and say, look, you, grocery stores especially, supply a bag, paper bags. Honestly, it's ridiculous. You go to stores and they don't even give you a bag anymore. I'm mind blown by the whole thing. And it's only like, it's only Canada. I go to the States, I can still get bags. I can get a plastic bag. I can get a paper bag. I can get a stopper in my Starbucks coffee if I want. I can get a plastic straw in my drink if I want. But you can't do it in Canada. It's insane. It's insane. It's a paper bag. Bring back the paper bag, please. And again, I love that Doug Ford came out and did this, although I do question why he's only directing this to the LCBO. Like, I think that's a little bit, maybe it's because, you know, he doesn't want to be that premier that's then trying to tell private business what to do. But I mean, let's be realistic. The government tells private business what to do all the time. The government told the private businesses to stop using plastic bags. So why not say, stop using plastic bags, go to paper? I don't know. I mean, that's a whole other conversation though, too. Are they allowed to use paper bags? Is there something, you know, why do they have to use reusable bags? Or was this something that, you know, the business association all decided, okay, well, we're, you know, or all the Chamber of Commerce got together and said, well, we're just going to, you know, make this federal, you know, countrywide or province-wide. No bags. I hate it. I honestly do. I get so upset. And I'm not just talking grocery stores. Like, I'm at the point now where I normally remember my bags, but sometimes I'm out and I'm like, man, I'd love to grab a few groceries. I don't have a bag. Now I'm going and paying for another bag that, again, has plastic in it. And now you end up with all these bags at home. But more so, like, you go to, you know, You go shopping in a clothing store, Old Navy, The Gap, Banana Republic, whatever, right? Anywhere you go, and like you got to pay for a bag. It's just, it's so, so insane, this whole thing. I think Doug Ford going to win some big points, honestly. And if we all know, like, you know, election's coming up in 2 years for him, I think he should stay on that. That's something he knows his base, and I think that is going to be something that a lot of residents would get behind and say, you know what, you're right. Like, I'm already paying way more for my groceries, for example, than I've ever paid before. Give me a damn bag. It's part of the service. Just like how bagging your groceries used to be a part of the service. Like, I'm going to grab the groceries, put them in the cart, you ring them through, you put them in a bag, you know? My dad had a grocery store when I was growing up. And he had people who just bagged groceries. And then they'd even bring it out to your car for you. If you needed it, you didn't have to pay extra for that, which of course you have to do now. Oh, you want them to bring the groceries to your car? Well, yeah, now you got to pay for a subscription for that, right? So, you know, there's some things that we did back in the day that I wish we'd bring back. Full service gasoline, another one. My mom, for example, is a good example. I don't think my mom knows how to pump gas. I don't think she's ever pumped gas a day in her life. And I keep saying to her, you know, Dad's not going to be here forever. And if he goes before you, who's pumping your gas, Mom? She's like, I don't know. I guess you're going to have to come on, you know, anytime I need gas, you're going to have to fill the tank. And I'm sure she's not alone. I'm sure there's other people out there who've never pumped gas before, right? I used to love, you know, when I first started driving, you go to full serve, they'd wash your windshield, they'd pump the gas. I mean, they'd come right to the car, you could pay right there, and then you tip the guy a few bucks. You didn't mind, right? But you didn't have to tip. It was all part of the service. It was worked into the price, right? So anyway, speaking of grocery costs, kind of, you know, we're on that same subject here. People have come out and said they want to start boycotting Loblaws. And I don't know if this started with that tweet about the $37 package of chicken breast. Maybe. The $9 butter didn't help either. Now, again, I don't know where these prices are. I've seen, you know, the tweets about them. I've never paid $9 for butter. I would never pay $37 for a package of chicken breasts. Granted, I shop around. I have the Flip app on my phone. I stock up on chicken breasts when they're cheap. And then I package them, you know, in separate Ziploc bags, and then you freeze them, right? But we have seen the prices skyrocket at the grocery store. And so a lot of people have now come together and said, okay, we need to start boycotting Loblaws. Now, easier said than done, obviously. I mean, even just looking locally at the local Loblaws brands that we have, Real Canadian Superstore, No Frills, Shoppers Drug Mart, Zayers, and then we got, you know, independent grocer, Fortino's, there's the Atlantic Superstore. What else do we have even locally? Oh, there's Value Mart, which we have locally, Wholesale Club, which we have on Dougal, and then there's Dominion, there's Extra Foods, there's even Choice Properties is, you know, they own Plazas. So Loblaws has a subsidiary that owns the Plaza. So you look at the superstore on Dougal is a good example of that. They own that entire building. So Winners is in there. Well, they are a tenant of Loblaws, Choice Properties, and then everything else that's in there too, right? So you got to think about that also. But then you look at independent grocer and No Frills, for example. Well, sure, those brands are owned by Loblaws. However, those stores are owned locally. So No Frills, for example, you'll see like Tony and Kathy's No Frills. Well, Tony and Kathy own that No Frills. And Loblaws is just the wholesaler. So my dad owned a grocery store, you know, like I said, and he went through two different wholesalers over the years. So first, he was a Superior Market, and then went to EMA. It was the same wholesaler, though, for both of those, Elliott Marr Association, which either got bought out or was a part of the Oshawa group. I don't know. This is going back, you know, 90s. So either way, Oshawa Foods, right? Which now, you know, since then, they got bought up, I think, you know, in the late 80s by the same company that now owns Sobeys, Safeway, IGA, Foodland, Farm Boy, Freshco, Thrifty, and then Lawton's Drug as well. It's like Empire Company, right? So, but my dad, again, locally owned his store, but then this wholesaler was this other company. So he then ended up switching to a different company after that and went to Nectal. I don't know if you remember Nectal, but Nectal Supermarkets. So again, then Nectal was his wholesaler. So again, just because that store has that local branding doesn't mean that it's actually owned by the conglomerate, right? They're just the wholesaler there. So, and what I'm getting at is, okay, you want to start boycotting, you know, Loblaws, for example. Well, you got to think about everyone else who's now going to be affected. Tony and Kathy's No Frills. Well, now if you're boycotting them, well, now you're hurting that local store owner and you're hurting the employees also, right? So I know for a fact most, most superstores and Zayers are unionized. Metros are unionized. So those are unionized employees who are making a good living also. Now, you can go shop at Walmart, but those people aren't unionized. The company doesn't care about their employees. Not that Loblaws cares about their employees either, but you get what I'm saying here, right? Is that they're paid less than those Metro employees or those Superstore Zayers employees, okay? So there's a lot of trickle effect that's going to happen with trying to boycott those. So what do you do here? Well, that's kind of part of the problem, is that how do we fight back? And so these big conglomerates are saying, don't blame us, blame the federal government who implemented a carbon tax, and now we have to pay extra we're getting increased costs because the cost is now being passed on to the consumer, because every time you ship a product, you know, you go get it from the farm and bring it to the warehouse. Well, carbon tax on there. Now you go from the warehouse to another warehouse, carbon tax on there. And then, you know, that other warehouse to then the store, carbon tax there. And so, you know, Loblaws did show earlier in its fight with PepsiCo Frito-Lay, it is willing to leave shelves empty in a fight over money with suppliers, right? So they have been fighting to get lower costs. But it's not as if it's just Loblaws that has high prices. And so I get that Loblaws is being targeted here, but I shop around. Metro, in my opinion, Metro is just as or probably even more expensive than the real Canadian Superstore. And then I was at Zayers today, actually, and there's some things at Zayers that are cheaper than the Superstore, owned by the same company. And then sometimes you'll find things cheaper at Metro, but you know what I mean? You got to shop around. So it depends what you're doing, right? And then there's Food Basics. Well, sometimes I'll shop at Food Basics too, but then I see things at Food Basics, which is supposed to be a discount, you know, grocery store. And sometimes things are more expensive there than they are at Superstore. So who's the fight with? Is it really with Loblaws, or is it with all of the grocery store companies? Pretty much anyone. And you got to throw Walmart in there as well. Or is it with the government, or is it with all of the above, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. I do know that Loblaws is obviously heavily targeted for two reasons. They are the top grocer in the country. And I think it's also just because you can actually put a name to their former president, Galen Weston, right? He was visibly the face of the company for many years. A lot of people see him as the villain, right? And I think he's now kind of paying for that PR strategy of coming out and being like, hey, I'm Galen Weston. I care about you. And now people are like, Galen Weston, he's evil. I suspect most Canadians probably don't know who the CEO of Metro is. I don't know who the CEO of Metro is. I could look it up, I'm sure. So I think that's evident in the whole boycott Loblaws hashtag, which is making the rounds on social media. And I think also when you look at Loblaws, you know who, you know Zayers, Superstore, Shoppers, No Frills. You know that all of them are under the same banner, where a lot of people maybe don't realize that Metro and Food Basics are under the same banner, or that Freshco and Sobeys and Safeway are all under the same banner, right? So I think that may be part of it also, and maybe that's to do with the PC Optimum points that people have realized, oh, well, PC Optimum, I associate that with Loblaws, so I know that's all the same company because I can use my points at any of these places. I don't know. Maybe that's has something to do with it too. And look, I'm not going to stick up for these big grocery chains. I'm not. I will say though, if you start looking into financial statements, which I have done, and if you start looking into Loblaws financial statements, for example, they actually make pitiful profits every quarter for a company as large as they are. I mean, they've been around 2-4% for the last decade. So the problem, I guess the issue with Canadian grocers is that the population is so spread out. Food is regulated like crazy, especially dairy. And in general, people make awful wages in this country. So if we continue pushing out these Canadian grocery retailers, we're going to end up getting more of those Walmarts, those American companies coming in, displacing every Canadian grocer, and then hiking up prices sky high, just like they did with consumer goods, right? Walmart is notorious for moving in to municipalities, non-union staff, obviously, you know that they are so against unions. And so what they'll do, they'll come in and they will take a loss for the first 3 to 5 years. They will have their prices so low, nobody can compete with those prices. And so all of the mom and pop shops, those locally owned retailers, end up closing up. And this is exactly what happened in Prince Edward Island. Perfect example. Walmart moves in, super low prices. Everybody shops at Walmart. All those local stores end up closing up. Once those local stores are closed up, Walmart then raises their prices. Well, Walmart's the only place you can shop for that stuff now, right? So where else are you going to go? You got to go to Walmart. It's the only place. So either you're paying that price or you're not getting that at him. But yeah, it is interesting once you start looking at the financial statements and seeing that, you know, again, Loblaw's profit's only been anywhere from around 2-4% the past decade. And I'm not trying to, you know, stick up for them. I'm not. But it is interesting once you actually kind of start reading in and doing some digging, you see, you know, their profit margin isn't that great. I think it's maybe sitting, you know, a little over 3% right now. But I know that they are looking at opening more stores. For example, I've heard that they are looking at opening some smaller stores, similar to what Sobeys has, you know, in Toronto, where they have those Sobeys Express, right? And I've heard that they're going to be doing that with some Loblaws stores as well. I think they're going to call them maybe Zayers Express. And one of the locations I'm told that they are looking at is the Shoppers Drug Mart, Tecumseh Road. It used to be a Loeb store, and then it was a Zayers. Now it's a Shoppers Drug Mart. It's like Tecumseh and Westminster there. So it'll be interesting to see if they end up going through with that plan. Now, I'm not sure if you saw recently that NDP leader Jagmeet Singh has talked about an excess profit tax on grocery chains. And he's said that this is something that him and the NDP would possibly, if they ever, you know, formed a government, which I don't think is going to be happening anytime soon, but saying that that's what they would propose and that they would use the revenue from the excess profit tax for initiatives such as increasing the GST rebate for Canadians and investing in food banks. Not quite sure how that's going to work. I mean, look, any new taxes are that you implement, especially on these corporations, they're just going to end up making the consumer pay for them anyway, right? So how about we just, instead of adding more taxes, how about we just restructure the tax system, right? Where everybody just pays the same. How about that? Everybody pays, you know, say 15%, no matter if you make a dollar or if you make $1 billion, you pay 15% tax. So still, the more money you make, the more you're going to pay. But you're not going to be penalized for making more money. So 15% flat tax, right? That's what we should be having here, is that it doesn't matter. Look, again, if you're making a dollar or you're making $1 billion, you're still paying the same percentage of tax. So yeah, if you make more money, obviously you're going to pay more taxes, but that percentage doesn't go up, right? And I think that's, you want to talk about fair and equitable. That's what, you know, everybody's always pushing. Hey, we need to be fair. We need to be equitable. Well, you want to be fair and equitable, then let's have everybody pay the exact same percentage on tax, on profits. That's the way that we can actually combat this. So, but we'll see. I don't see that ever happening. You know, again, the rich continue to get richer, and unfortunately, the poor continue to get poorer. And you know what? With that being said, let's wrap up, because, you know, this is actually, we've talked about a lot of different things so far this week. And again, thanks to Bill Wilichka for joining us on the podcast this week. I will be back with a new podcast next week. I can promise you that. So thanks again for supporting this podcast and the show. Make sure to visit WindsorPodcast.com for more information. It's the Windsor Podcast. I am Mark McKenzie. Thank you so much for tuning in. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Windsor Podcast. Find more at WindsorPodcast.com.